We asked a question at the beginning of this hour. Can neuroscience explain what happens in a psychedelic experience? I mean, if you could somehow peel back the skull and look at someone's brain while they're on acid or mushrooms, could you watch the trip happening in real time? The answer is yes. That's what British neuroscientist Robin Carhart-Harris has been doing for the past 15 years. He got into psychedelic science after meeting Amanda Fielding, who introduced him to David Nutt at Imperial College London. And since then, Robin has done pioneering studies of psilocybin using brain imaging, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it.
I'm just trying to imagine your test subjects in an fMRI machine. I mean, you have to be absolutely still, and they're having this mind-blowing experience as you are looking at what's happening in their brain while all this is going on. It sounds crazy.
Well, it does. But it can be quite a thrill. And, you know, we're safeguarding against anyone freaking out, having their first psychedelic experience and then having it in such a
confined environment.
Yeah. And so it worked.
So were there any big surprises as you started looking at this brain imaging?
Yes, because there wasn't much to go on at that time. There'd been some early positron emission tomography. I know that's a fancy term, PET imaging, but not much. And the methods were kind of crude. So we would inject in our psilocybin with the scanner running. We would subsequently look at changes in their brain blood flow and see that it was dropping.
It was dropping. So there was actually reduced brain activity.
There was reduced brain blood flow because it isn't quite a one-to-one relationship between blood flow and brain activity. I know it sounds like a detail, but it's not really a minor one. It's actually quite important.
So is one way to think about this is the way our prefrontal cortex works, it kind of acts like a filter in a way. So it blocks out certain things that we might otherwise sense from our unconscious. And I know there's this phrase, the executive function. The cortex is what allows us to move around in the world and sort of act out. And I guess the question is, what happens when that system is knocked out?
Yeah, it's not entirely knocked out, but it is dysregulated, sort of scrambled in its functioning. It is reasonable what you say, that this is the locus of this is cortex, and it's high-level cortex, and the prefrontal cortex is typically a part of the brain that we think of as massively expanded in humans. People have a certain clarity of vision under psychedelics. It sort of suggests that maybe humans have overshot and we do too much analytical thinking. And if you just relax that, there can be this broader, clearer vision.
Now, you've come up with this theory, what you call the entropic brain, that psychedelics sort of activates this tendency towards, I guess, what you call less regulation, more disorder. Is it fair to say?
Yeah. Psychedelics seem to increase the already very complex quality of brain activity during normal waking consciousness. They lift it up. And so another synonym for entropy, these are all synonyms, complexity, diversity, richness even, is information.
More information. Which is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you would think that, again, going back to the cortex, you'd think that this very analytical part of the brain, that, you know, that's the information processing part. But you're saying actually maybe that keeps out information.
Yeah. It sort of suggests that although our information processing during normal waking consciousness seems very impressive and our analytical skills are impressive, there can be a sort of compression of other aspects of information held within the system. Things like memory, emotion. I'm referring to these things because these are the things that seem to arise and emerge under a psychedelic, that people have insights, emotional insights, personal insights, remember things sometimes very remote into their childhood.
You've described this as a reset, like the brain gets jumbled up, it's knocked out of its old way of thinking, and it's, I don't know, new neural pathways are opened up.
There's pretty good evidence for that now, concrete evidence in terms of anatomy of the sprouting of new components of neuronal communication via exposure to psychedelics, something referred to as synaptogenesis.
Is the brain actually getting rewired then?
Yes, it likely is. At least there's an opportunity for rewiring. And there is this paradox around plasticity that in and of itself, it's not necessarily a good thing. You could use that window of malleability or plasticity for sort of ethically questionable ends. We could think of things like the history of military use of psychedelics around things like mind control. But in psychedelic therapy, it's about opening, well, creating this openness, this opportunity for realization, self-realization, done in a very nurturing context.
Now, there's some fascinating evolutionary questions here. I mean, one is just why would the human brain even respond to psychedelic substances? Let's say mushrooms laced with psilocybin we find in nature. I mean, did these co-evolve the human brain with mushrooms? Was it just an accident that our ancient ancestors happened to eat these and they had these remarkable experiences? Do you think about that kind of thing?
Yeah, I do a bit. And there are theories about it. Terence McKenna, most famously, had the so-called stoned ape theory of consciousness and the evolution of consciousness.
Just talk about that for a moment. I mean, his theory was that actually consuming mushrooms and maybe some other psychedelic substances, that essentially jump-started human consciousness, the modern human brain.
It's a fascinating idea, really exciting, spine-chilling, yet I'm not sold. I just think that it's a bit too psychedelic-centric, even though it's appealing and kind of fun. I think probably what's more common is the Earth was in a particular climactic sort of state or mode that was hard, and it required some serious ability to deal with this hardship in a thoughtful and far-seeing and perhaps inventive way. And it was those early humans who managed to ride that period of high stress and challenge that have survived. And maybe they were the ones who had a bit more of the serotonin 2A receptors.
Which is what psychedelics activate.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We know that with a high degree of confidence now that these particular receptors that are kind of locks that sit on neurons, brain cells, and then the key comes in, which could be serotonin, an important brain chemical, or it could be a drug that hijacks and mimics serotonin and works in the same way as a key. And that's what psychedelics seem to do. They're a kind of magic, in the broad sense, key that comes in and turns the lock.
Why are psychedelics so powerful? Why can one trip literally change someone's life?
So to answer that, I would appeal again to the serotonin system and these magic locks, the 2A receptors. I think that they're special receptors. Humans have a lot of them. They are disproportionately expressed in cortex that humans have so much of. And these 2A receptors are especially prevalent at the highest level of the already high-level aspect of brain, the cortex. And so they're in these regions of brain associated with consciousness and species-specific functions like self-reflection, self-consciousness. Why are they there is a really crucial question, and that can help us understand why psychedelics are so profound in their action. And my feeling is that they're there for profundity, in a sense. They're there for fundamental shifts in perspective. And it's only really with fundamental shifts in perspective that you can have fundamental shifts in behavior. I think that's why they're there.
That's neuroscientist Robin Carhart-Harris, previously at Imperial College London, and now director of the psychedelics division at UC San Francisco.